Hello, and welcome to the Mayo Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 comics sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. Numbers we're going to be talking about are the top 300 comic book sales for April 2016. This is what sold through Diamond into comic book shops. Obviously, this is sell-in, not sell-through information, which means we don't know how many are actually sitting on store shelves and stuff. This is not the totality of all comic book sales, because, I mean, there's direct sales through subscription stuff, although that's not much of a factor. There's sales at conventions and, you know, this really covers the lion's share of it. For some publishers, such as the Archie Digest and stuff, they do big business outside of this venue. But really, I think Diamond is kind of the 800-pound gorilla, if you will. And when I have done comparisons in past years of print runs versus Diamond numbers, Diamond usually accounted for 80-90% sometimes. But obviously, it varies from title to title, publisher to publisher, etc. This also doesn't include digital sales. From what I'm hearing anecdotally, digital sales do seem to be getting a little stagnant, though. So from my perspective, this is what's really controlling the decision-making in a lot of cases in terms of sales of what they continue to publish, what they don't. Now, starting with the breakdown of the top 300, as we usually do, a little bit lopsided this time. 52.6% of the total units for the top 300 went to Marvel. 27.24% went to DC. It's not quite a 2-to-1 difference, but it's frankly pretty damn close. And then Image in a distant but very strong third place with 7.51% of the total units for the top 300. If we look at it by dollars, frankly, it just stratifies it a little bit more. Marvel has a higher average price. We wound up with 54.63% of the total dollars for the top 300. Again, these are retail dollars. DC had 26.65% of those dollars and Image 6.45% of those dollars. And again, the average price for DC and Image was about on par, but also about 45 cents less or so than Marvel's average price. And Marvel this time, if we convert to units, over 3.5 million units for Marvel this month, compared to the 1.8 for DC and a little over 500,000 for Image. And if we total up everybody else that made the top 300 in terms of publishers, that's about 846,000 plus units.
Well, and if you take out the premier publishers, plus Boom, who actually finished between IDW and Dark Horse this time. So we're going to take out Boom, IDW. We're going to take out the premieres plus Boom.
Okay.
You're down to 369,000, which, again, is approximately 10% of Marvel's. So Marvel did, you know, 10 times what everybody non-premier did.
Well, yeah, you take the premier and Boom, and what's left is about 5.5% of the total unit sales for the top 300.
Yeah, it looks to be about 369,000 issues.
Yeah, this is why most stores are going to get DC, Marvel, DC, Image, and then some other stuff. But the further down this list of publishers you go on a month-to-month basis, the less profitable it is. There's just not that much stuff getting sold.
Well, and the other thing that I do think is important to talk about with all those other publishers we're talking about, Dynamite had 9 things.
Mm-hmm.
Valiant had 8. Titan had 7. Archie and Aftershock had 3. Oni and Joe had 2. And everybody else had 1.
Again, that's just in the top 300. And again, at least twice as many things are released in the given month.
You sum that up, that is 44 items out of 300.
Yeah.
Marvel had 91. Marvel had over twice as many items as opposed to everyone in the back half of previews.
Well, almost every third item on the list is a Marvel item.
Well, yeah, 91, yeah, they are just about a third. And DC's hanging in there at 75 and Image at 34 again. You know, And then you get into the kind of the other premier publishers, the Boom, the IDW, the Dark Horse. You're still dealing with about 50 issues or 50 items. But yeah, 44 for the combined of everyone in the back half.
It's a very uneven playing field, and different publishers are playing just at different levels.
Yeah.
And there's nothing necessarily right or wrong about that, but it's a very fundamental reality of the comic book market. And to think that a Titan or an Aftershock is playing at the same level as even a Dark Horse or an Image or an IDW, much less at the level of Marvel and DC, it's just not true.
Yeah.
You know? And Image is its own unique entity. Just because it's a very different, I don't say corporate structure, but creative structure to the business. But it's Marvel is I've been tracking these numbers for, closing in on about 20 years now. Marvel is the top dog. It just that's the way it is.
Huh?
And I think some of that is they've got really good characters. Some of it is they've got really good creators. Some of it is over the years they've had, and I think now is one of those times, really solid leadership, and both creatively and editorially, and I think marketing-wise too. It's just something that, I mean, DC, well, Rebirth. We're recording this on May 26th, the day after DC Universe Rebirth came out, and we're less than 5 years into the new 52, and they're doing what I consider to be a pretty drastic retooling of it. Drastic enough, I went out to the local shop, picked up the issue, lest it get spoiled for me, and even then, I wasn't fast enough, I would have had to get it a day or two before it was released to avoid some spoilers. But,
This always bothers me to a degree when we talk about this stuff, and I realize I'm in the minority, clearly. To me, Marvel's done it 3 or 4 times in that same time frame. I mean, we've been through 5 different Marvel nows since then as well.
I split the hairs differently, and this may be, you know, I don't think it's semantics, but I think it's just a different viewpoint.
Yeah.
For me, Marvel has gone through a number of major marketing initiatives.
Yes.
The Marvel Now, the all-new Marvel Now, the all-different, you know, it's crazy, the names.
Yeah.
But in most cases, it's just another wave of new titles. They're, you know, shuffling the deck chairs. I don't say on the Titanic, because they're not sinking.
Nope.
They may change who's Thor, who's Cap, who's Iron Man, whatever. But they're not rebooting continuities. They are not... to me, it's one thing to re-volume Daredevil or to put another person, you know, as Captain America or whatever. It's fundamentally different than a Flashpoint, a Crisis on Infinite Earths, where you're basically saying, yeah, that continuity, you know, well, we're scrubbing it, we're redoing the timeline. It's all in story, so I'll give them that, but what you knew the character did a year and a half ago, maybe he didn't do a year and a half ago, maybe he never did it at all, you know, whereas they may fudge the backstory and retcon a few things, certainly they do at Marvel, but not to the point where I am fundamentally confused as to who the original Avengers were. I know who they were. Heck,
yes.
I even know who the original X-Men were in the comics. That hasn't changed. At times, who the original Titans and or who the original Justice Leaguers were. Open to debate. You know, that to me is a fundamental difference.
Fair enough. And, you know, I agree. But yeah, yes. It's simply a different way of looking at it. I'm not saying it's wrong. I just... The idea that Marvel is kind of this ongoing juggernaut, I don't exactly buy. And when we flip over to
its
top
continuity
the top's
is
comic
ongoing.
List, we'll see that.
I think Marvel's continuity is ongoing, and while it's had a couple of major bumps in the road, it hasn't been completely overhauled, I would argue, since it started. Whereas the titles are certainly not ongoing concerns.
Yes, no, the titles definitely are not ongoing concerns.
Or at least not continuing. It's the whole concept of a continuing title is one I'm struggling with these days.
Yeah.
If we go over to the top comics list,
mm-hmm.
I gotta say I was not expecting Black Panther #1 to top the list, much less by the way the amount it did. It did over 250,000 units, 253,258 units to be exact.
Mm-hmm.
Read the thing, thought it was good. Not going to say I thought it was a top the charts by unsustainable levels. Good. I think, though, it was a combination of it was in some subscription boxes. It timed out well towards the movie where he gets introduced to a wider audience. It had a high profile, although not necessarily a high profile comic book writer, a high profile writer. I'm going to be very interested to see how this title does moving forward. Huge, huge plummet is my expectation. And that's no comment on the quality of the book, but a quarter million units, not sustainable, period. This is something that if it doesn't drop by like 60, 70%, I will be pleasantly surprised and expect it to make up for that on the next issue, to be honest.
Yeah, I certainly would not have predicted this, but I don't think I was as flabbergasted as some comments I've read would indicate others were, either. And it goes back to something we've talked about the last several months.
Mm-hmm.
This is slightly behind Iron Man number one. Marvel's got a marketing machine that made this happen.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And that book went to 66,000 with issue two and, you know, has slid down to where it's this month's is at 46,000. And I wouldn't, at this point, I would predict a similar thing will happen with Black Panther.
Almost certainly.
And there's a few others on that list.
Well, this to me gets into one of the fundamental differences between the two companies of Marvel and DC. Because in addition to the regular cover of Black Panther number one.
Yeah, I was going to ask, how many are there?
There were, I put this in my article because I'm like, what's going on here? And I did some research, Scott. This is my theme for the month. 10 variant covers, variant and incentive covers for the first issue were offered in February previews. There was a variant cover by Sanford Green that could be freely ordered. Okay, that's cool. I'm good with that.
So there's two covers. Okay.
Okay, but to me that's a variant. You can order it. It's just an alternative, but it's not jump through hoops.
Yep.
But then there were incentive covers. There was a 1 in 20, two different 1 in 25s, a 1 in 50, a 1 in 75, and three different covers that could be ordered if the retailer's order for the regular cover of Black Panther number 1 exceeded 125% of the orders of Doctor Strange number 2. I assume that's aggregate sales of Doctor Strange number 2, not the regular cover. I'm presuming it had an alternate cover, incentive cover, because it's a Marvel book. But that doesn't even factor in the GameStop exclusive or the Marvel Collector Core exclusive. And the Black Panther number 2, which was released on May 11th, this is one of the nice things about doing this episode a little later in the month. We have a little more information. That second issue had another free-to-order Sanford Green cover, a 1 in 25 Age of Apocalypse incentive cover by Frank Cho, and another incentive cover each retailer could order as much as they wanted if they ordered the regular cover of Black Panther 2 exceeding 80% of their Black Panther number 1 orders.
The interesting one you said was 125% of Strange number 2.
Yep.
That in and of itself... And again, at one point we talked about trying to figure these out ahead of time. That's an interesting one because that book did about 66,000.
I did a little digging, and for the May 2016 previews, because I'm like, this has got to be a pain for retailers. They had to know to fully take advantage of all of these things. They had to know their orders of 23 past comics. Spread across five different order forms.
Yeah.
And that's, okay, how do I need to do this? Okay, 80% of that. Do I want to do this? How about this? You know, it's like, this just seems like more trouble than I think it's worth.
But to be fair, again, let's go back to, we're dealing with national averages, those type of things.
National totals, yes.
Okay, so if we assume, rather than trying to, obviously it's going to vary from shop to shop, but obviously, in theory, the shops that ordered more of one sold more of one, so they're bigger Marvel shops, they're fan base, arguably. Whether or not that's true is not.
I'm going to disagree with that they ordered more means they sold more.
Okay, they ordered more. There are shops that are into this, either for variant covers or they have a larger fan base, they have a larger customer base, or they have a customer base that's more into these things.
I see those as very different things in so much as you may have a customer base very into variants, and it makes sense to order the 20 that you're not going to sell to get the markup on that variant or the incentive. That's 1 true. In 20.
You may have ones that are into variants, you may have ones that are into the Marvel universe.
That's different, though, than actually having the demand for 20 copies.
Oh, absolutely. But I just quickly went and looked back at how Doctor Strange number 2 sold.
Okay.
It's about 66,000.
Uh-huh.
Which means in order to order this, again, if we assume this is one big national store, in order to get those variants we're talking about, you have to order about 83,000 of Black Panther number 1.
Mm-hmm.
Which would place it 7th on this list.
Okay.
You essentially have to assume the people that ordered that for that. In other words, in order to get that variant.
There were three that they could get at that point.
But, okay, in order to get those three variants. The book goes to 7th on the list just for variants.
Yes.
And then you assume people are going to order the normal and all the other stuff anyways. You know, so you take 88,000 out of this. Now you're down to 170 or so.
At some point.
Which puts it right about where Thor was.
At some point when we're not recording, I think the two of us need to sit down and put together an Excel spreadsheet.
Yeah.
Where we could put this in and basically say, okay, given this and these offers, you know, here's what it would boil down to as to, you know, how rare is the normal cover compared to some of these? And it's just, it would take me a while to work through such a spreadsheet, to be honest.
Of course.
And if I do such a thing, and frankly, if any retailers out there have ideas as to how it should be, I'd be willing to make it available to retailers just to make their lives easier, because I'd rather they spend their time doing something more important than, you know, figuring out the math on some of these crazy ratio and incentive covers.
I agree. My bigger point is, if you take that, mm-hmm. those three variants out of this equation alone, and you mentioned that this book potentially was in some subscription boxes.
Yes.
Okay.
At least the Marvel Collector Core. I've got that one, and I know okay. there's a GameStop exclusive.
So let's assume there's a minimum of 18,000 in those. Probably a low number.
Probably, but okay.
But that's 100,000 extra issues right there. Between the people trying to get that 125% variant and the subscription boxes, we're lowballing, saying that's an extra 100,000 issues.
So that's a 40% drop right there.
Well, but it puts it at 150.
Yeah.
Marvel number ones for this current iteration after this most recent Civil War or Secret Wars,
mm-hmm.
that seems to be a reasonable number of where those sell. Like I said, Iron Man actually did about 275. Thor did about 150. So once you start looking at it, while selling a quarter of a million units is certainly an achievement for Marvel. But once you start looking at the marketing that went into doing it, it doesn't seem quite as out of left field as one might think at first glance.
Well, and that's part of why I was surprised, is frankly, I don't pay attention to all the variants when I'm doing my ordering.
Yeah, exactly. You don't. You don't necessarily think of the subscription boxes when you look at this number and some of those other things.
No, not at all. I mean, I'm going more on, hey, I read the thing. How do I think it'll do
yeah.
on some of the stuff? Versus, oh my God, it had 15 variant, or different covers it's selling under.
Yeah. And so when you get into how many covers, the exclusive for GameStop, the subscription box, the yada yada yada, all of a sudden it becomes very easy to go, oh well. If a Marvel number one of a semi-major character does about 120, and you can add an extra 120 through these type of marketing things, all of a sudden that 250, while still impressive, doesn't seem like that insanely impressive number it looks at just kind of on the surface.
I guess I'm at the point, having again studied these numbers for better part of 2 decades, sales of number ones do not faze me at all. They certainly do not impress me.
Well, yes, that is also true.
Because again, look at, like you said, the different things. I would use the term shenanigans, but we'll go with things. It's less more neutral than negative.
Well, because I don't think the GameStop and the subscription box are as much shenanigans as some of the variants.
That's
They're
fair.
Certainly marketing tools.
That's fair. And I think putting the first issue of Black Panther in a box that people are getting with the Civil War stuff. It's like, okay, that may get the thing into the right audience.
Yeah.
That's actually not a bad marketing move.
Exactly.
But to treat those sales, and I've mentioned this before, on par with the copy I bought because I specifically wanted that, I think is just fundamentally wrong. You know, I again, they're never going to break those out to a second column or something like that. But in my mind, it's apples and oranges. And they're lumping it together as if they're the same. And I don't agree with that.
Yeah. And unfortunately, it would be, I wish there was another book that sold close enough to this that we would get a visibility into some of those subscription boxes, some of the other things. Because as it stands, it's still the retail rank number one. But it would be interesting if there was another book that could somehow sell 220 legitimately. It would be interesting to see if Black Panther still had that number one retail rank.
Yeah. And with this many different, you know, things going on, it's obviously going to fall because there's not that kind of stuff going on with the second issue.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also not when we could say, well, it's that 1 in 75 thing that made the difference. Yeah, it's, again, was it the subscription box, the GameStop thing? It's there's too much smokescreen around it.
Yeah.
To clearly attribute the specifics to each different cover.
Now, I will say this. All that being said, what I think is surprising, as I pointed out, this is essentially did as well as kind of a mainline Avenger number one is done in this round for Marvel. I think the fact that Black Panther is number one sold at the same line as the other mainline Avenger number ones is actually does say something about the popularity of the character, the popularity of the creators, the interest in the character. I do think while everything we've kind of said to this point, it's impressive, but it's not as impressive as it could have been. There is a part of me that says, I was comparing this to Thor and Iron Man.
Exactly.
The fact that Black Panther's now in the category that we compare it with Thor and Iron Man, I think is an amazing accomplishment.
I mean, Iron Man has been in 6 films so far.
And he's an original Avenger.
And an original Avenger, and has had his own cartoon.
Yeah.
Well, Black Panther was
several.
Well, yeah. Black Panther was essentially getting introduced to the mainstream audience with Civil War.
Yeah,
not
yes.
Totally, but predominantly.
Yeah.
He'd been in a few cartoons here and there. But yes, he's certainly not as high profile of a character by any stretch of the imagination.
So, yeah. So, again, the fact that we kind of said, it did as well as a mainline Avenger maybe sounds like we're downplaying how well it did, which we are to a degree. But the fact that Black Panther did as well as a mainline Avenger is quite a compliment, too.
I'm not trying to downplay how well the first issue did.
Yeah.
I'm trying to downplay how important that is.
Yes.
Because the second issue is not going to do anywhere near as well.
No.
That's just a foregone conclusion in my mind.
But again, if the second issue follows the trajectory of some of those previous ones we have been talking about, you know, if we're at issue 5, 6, 7, and Black Panther's still selling 45,000, 50,000, I think that is quite an accomplishment and does speak to how well the character has been received.
I would agree with that, but I also kind of don't see that happening. I'm thinking by issue 6, it'll be down closer to the 30,000 to 40,000 range, but time will tell.
Yeah, time will tell. We'll see.
I hope they're successful. I hope they do good stuff. I want all these creators to be successful. It's a shame there's so few things at this level of sales. Next item, Star Wars Poe Dameron number 1, 175,322 units. It's Star Wars. It's tied into the new film. Okay, you know, I'll grant you that. That's another one that had a 1 in 15, a 1 in 25, a 1 in 50, a 1 in 100, and a 1 in 200 ratio covers. There were another 4 covers that they could order if they exceeded the retailer's orders for, I think it was Star Wars number 12. That was the final part of the showdown on Smuggler's Moon story immediately before the Vader Down crossover. So, hey, at least they're not, I mean, they're being nice. They're not saying, oh, you gotta top the crossover storyline kind of a thing. But again, a lot of this is inflated by selling the cover, not the contents.
And once we get down there, I want to make a point about the entire top 10.
Okay. I'm thinking Star Wars Poe Dameron, it will drop based, again, on all those incentive covers and such. I don't think it'll have quite the plummet Black Panther does, just because, well, Star Wars is really doing well over at Marvel these days. And the fact this ties into the films and stuff helps a lot. Dark Knight number 3, Master Race number 4, or Dark Knight 3, Master Race number 4. God, I hate when they put numbers in titles. 143,054 units. That's off about 15.9% from the previous. And then, of course, they have the two versions. This is the $5.99. They've got the $12.99. That just confuses my system a little bit. I hate when they do that. Again, top-selling thing for DC. Go figure. It'll continue to be in the months it comes out. This was about 9 weeks late, so you know it's going to happen.
It is certainly, I think, they lost some of its luster. I think part of that's its own schedule. I think part of it is
DC's pushing a lot of other things heavy right now.
DC is pushing other things heavy. Marvel's in the midst of a reboot and heading into another major event. DC's going into a major event for a book that's late and had some other issues. And, you know, I believe they canceled one to resolicit it. It was so late. And so, yeah, there's Dark Knight 3 is not doing as well as it could have, partially for its own reasons and partially for other reasons outside of itself.
I think they should have stockpiled the issues and made sure they got out on time.
I completely agree.
I mean, I get why they don't, but, you know, this happened on the previous Dark Knight series. It happened on the Sandman Overture series. If you're going to do a high-profile miniseries like this, get your ducks in a row. It's easy, but, I mean, this is the...
Now, let's take the Sandman out of it. As you pointed out, it happened with DK2.
Mm-hmm.
It also happened with All-Star Batman and Robin.
Yeah.
You've got some creators here that have a history of, you know, having trouble getting books out at DC.
Yes. Plan accordingly.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying punish these guys. I'm saying work around the fact that they may be late. And if they're not, awesome. No harm, no foul. You get it out sooner, you know, but have this stuff ready to go before you solicit it. I get that that's going to be hard for them to do on regular books since they're going twice monthly on some stuff. But again, when there's no particular need to fire the starting pistol any particular time for one of these like Dark Knight or Sandman Overture kind of miniseries, use the prep time, get it going, get it ready to go to where it comes out flawlessly. Hell, maybe even speed up the release if you've got everything in the can. It's a lesson I hope they learn, but they won't because it's just, I don't know. It seems it happens so often, and it seems from a fan perspective so obvious it's going to happen. There's got to be something else going on behind the scenes that we're just not privy to. Rank number 4, we got Star Wars C-3PO Special number 1, 120,841 units. That's, frankly, pretty good sales. Again, Star Wars is hot. This is a one-off kind of explaining why he had the red arm. Based on the content of the comic itself, I think it oversold. But you don't know that when you order it. So,
yeah. Based on the fact that it was a Star Wars one-shot starring a very beloved character, you kind of would have expected this.
Yeah, absolutely. And I, again, not saying it shouldn't have sold this way. I'm saying they should have had a better story since it sold this way.
Yes.
Now, the next one here at rank number 5, we've got Batman 51. 101,922 units. We've got one last issue of this title that has come out, and I'm not sure if it'll be above or below 100,000.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Of course, we made that prediction 3-4 issues ago, and we're proven sorely wrong. So,
I said it was the most likely. If it was going to happen, it would have happened with 49
or 48.
One of the two. Again, and I'm not saying it will happen. I'm just saying this is so close. I mean, 200,000 units, 2,000 units. That's not that big of a drop. A percent or two drop, and boom, it's kind of there. I just don't know if it'll have that on that 52nd issue or not. Either way, even if it is a bit below 100,000, this has been probably the most successful ongoing volume of a title I can think of. Just everything so far has stayed over the 100,000 mark. It's been incredibly well received from critics and fans alike. This is a successful run, no matter how you look at it, I think.
I completely agree. I do think, since we are talking just after Rebirth came out, the fact that Batman 52 didn't get included in that list of Justice League and Superman that you really need going into Rebirth number one might be the other reason it drops B. If it had been included in that list, it would have sold 150 in that last issue.
Yeah, but you didn't need to read it. You didn't.
I agree.
It was a great issue.
I'm not arguing any of that. I'm just saying if somewhere in editorial, if they had thought, you know, if we want to make sure we get this entire run in over 100,000, maybe put some of the events, particularly that were in Justice League, into the Batman title, since it kind of felt like...
I haven't read that Justice League, so I can't comment on that, but I see what you're saying. They could have put some story points in there to make it feel more relevant, maybe.
Yeah, and interesting. As good as that issue was, it did feel a little bit like... they were done and they just kind of, well, we got to do one more. And they did a wonderful story, but it didn't feel like part of the ongoing stories we've been getting.
I kind of felt like 51 and 52 were both epilogue-ish.
And 52 more so.
And not necessarily in the best of ways either. I liked 52 more than 51, but if they had just ended at 50, I don't think people would have been upset.
Yeah, exactly.
Man, rank number six, Gwenpool number one, 100,851 units. I am amazed by the appeal of this character.
You've been saying that for, you know, the year and a half she's been around.
I continue to be amazed. Have you been reading it? Any of her stuff?
I read the last volume that's currently, the volume before Secret Wars that's currently on Marvel Unlimited.
This is Gwenpool, not Spider-Gwen.
Oh, then no, I haven't.
That's part of why I'm surprised by this one. It's a Gwen Stacy, Deadpool-ish sort of thing.
Well, again, the appeal of Spider-Gwen, why not do it to Deadpool?
It's working for them.
Exactly.
We'll see how it goes. Again, this is not the sort of title I expect to stay over 100,000, but I, other than Batman, don't expect any to stay above 100,000.
Arguably is one that kind of, sort of... could maybe potentially do it. I think 100,000 is a little much, but Deadpool in general tends to stay in the top 25, and when it does something special, pops into the top 5 to 10.
Let's talk about Deadpool in a few minutes when we get down to rank 16.
Yep.
Because again, with the movie having come out and all of that, he's high profile. You'd think he'd do better than rank 16. Going through the rest of the top 10 just real quick, we got Star Wars 18. At 98,880 units. Again, Star Wars, it's going to be a top seller for Marvel for a while. Darth Vader 19, 76,965 units. They've announced that title will end with 25. Given these sales and the fact it's a top 10 title, it's obviously not going away because of sales reasons. I forget who it was, but someone on the forum had kind of... and I get why they did it. I don't think they meant anything by it, but they referred to it as, you know, the creative team's ending it. I'm surprised the title is, quote unquote, getting canned, as if they were getting fired or something. It's like, it's not what's happening. It's ending.
The interview with the creators essentially said, we were extremely happy to get the chance to tell a Vader story. I think we told a great Vader story. I don't have anywhere to go with the rest of this, so I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
And Marvel seems to have made a very un-Marvel-like choice to say, rather than we're just going to throw somebody else on there, or we're going to throw somebody else on there and announce a new number one, which still may happen.
Yeah, I was going to say, that I wouldn't be surprised by.
But if they allow it to just go away for a little while, I'm a little surprised, but it feels entirely a creative decision, not a sales decision.
I think it was potentially an editorial decision in so much as... the Star Wars and Darth Vader books have been very much in lockstep, both with the Vader Down crossover and even outside of that.
Even before that.
Yeah, before and after. Things happen in one book and it's referenced in the other.
Absolutely.
So getting it to maybe they fold Vader back into the Star Wars title itself and maybe it goes more frequent, you know, or maybe it doesn't, but it just simplifies the continuity and the editorial aspects. So it's been a great book. They've introduced some awesome characters. I'll be sorry to see it go, but you know, if the creative team's done, I respect them for saying that.
Yeah.
Harley Quinn and the Suicide Squad April Fool's Special number one, 75,354 units. It's a one-shot. Who cares? It's not going to come back next month and do anything. It's Harley. It's Suicide Squad. I'm not surprised it did well with the movie coming out.
This is one where you say, it's a one-shot. Who cares? As far as the sales numbers, because they're not coming back. But I would argue that's not true. Harley one-shots seem to be a bi-monthly occurrence.
Fair point, because they've done...
This is kind of like...
At least quarterly, if not every other month. You're right.
Yeah, exactly. And they're down a little like everything else, but not huge. I think the first one did over 100,000, and the last couple have been closer to the 80,000.
I guess because they're doing it quarterly and they have such different themes or whatever. They're selling as much based on it's a Harley Quinn something or other than anything specific about that issue.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, that's my point. It's essentially the quarterly Harley Quinn book.
Yeah. And then rounding out the top 10, Amazing Spider-Man number 10, 73,642 units. That's off about 16.5% from the previous issue, but this is also kind of historically around where the title often is. So
it did lose another 8% with the next issue, which is also down this list a couple of spots.
Yeah, down at rank 12.
Yeah.
But, I mean, this is right around the neighborhood where it could and should be selling, so highly sustainable at this point. Now, you had said you wanted to say something about the top 10?
Yeah, okay, so let's look back at the top 10. If you take out the number ones, the miniseries, and Star Wars, you're left with one or two ongoing, Spider-Man and Batman. Batman's ending, you can argue whether or not this is an epilogue, whether or not it's a lead-up to an event, however you want to look at it. So maybe Batman counts as an ongoing in the top 10. Spider-Man clearly does, but as we've seen, the next one's already... Again, I think it almost shows how irrelevant the top 10 is.
I would argue while we're getting a new volume of Batman, we're getting a new creative... we still have a Batman ongoing. I was going to say monthly, but it's going twice monthly, so...
Like I said, that one I give you, you may count, you may not count. To me, the only real ongoing in the entire top 10 is that Spider-Man book.
Yeah, in the top 10, in between the two Spider-Man issues is a Justice League issue.
Which, again, is a lead-up to a major event. Selling where it's been, so... like I said, Batman and Justice League, I feel you can go one way. You can include them as ongoings or not, and you can make a case either way.
I disagree with the assessment of their lead-ins to the event. They are happening before the event, but they are not... They were not marketed as lead-ins, like a prelude to Countdown or Infinite Crisis or something like that, where there was excitement and saying, ooh, this is building up to Rebirth.
Well, Justice League 49... Though really, again, now that we've seen 50 and which Rebirth, the first page says, please read 50 before you read this, is referenced highly, and 49 led right into it.
I guess my point is it wasn't solicited as such. It may have turned out that way, but I think the sales dynamic is fairly different.
Yeah, and like I said, that's fair. You can include them or you're not.
Yeah.
But again, I still think the overall point that the top 10s...
The irrelevance of it because it's... Short-lived.
Other than Star Wars. Here's what you can say. Star Wars does very well. That's the only thing you can kind of take out of the top 10 is Star Wars does well.
Batman does well.
And Batman does well. Yes.
But the rest, again, so many of them are number ones.
Including a Star Wars number one.
Yeah. And again, we often see number ones top of the chart. And then, you got to look pretty far down sometimes to find that number two.
Yep. There have been times we've had a number one in the top 10, and I went, wow, I wonder how number two is going to do. And you go, oh, let me tell you, if you look down at rank 70.
Yeah. I need to modify. I need to figure out how to highlight that in the spreadsheet, because with Marvel doing so many things that are multiple times a month, and now DC doing that, it's the nature of the business now, not just a offshoot or, you know what I mean?
Not just a one-off occurrence.
It's not an edge case anymore. It's one of the main cases.
Yeah.
it's amazing how drastically the nature of comic books have changed since I started doing the number crunching. Because before, I didn't even bother with volume indications of any sort. Because doesn't happen that often. Now, I mean, we've got multiple volumes in the same year sometimes. Yeah. And then again, multiple issues in the same month. And I don't mean like weekly stuff. It's just, you know, turn around, there's another Iron Man issue or something. I'm hoping that helps sales momentum. I am curious, both personally and then kind of across the board, how that's going to impact burnout and just reader momentum.
Well, yeah, and it's interesting. I know both you and I have discussed that we're not fans of the television season model for comics.
Mm-hmm.
But something that someone else pointed out, we're talking about the new, essentially what was in the Marvel 1, in the Civil War 2 Daily Bugle newspaper and the press release that went with it.
Okay, haven't seen that yet.
Okay, but there is CBR quoted Axel Alonso in the press release as saying, Marvel Now is about the future of the Marvel Universe. We're excited to provide fans with a snapshot of things to come right before San Diego Comic-Con. Fans can look forward to hearing about brand new titles, returning favorites, and even some shocking status quo shifts that are sure to keep fans guessing all the way through Civil War. Then there's some editorial saying, you know, this sounds like the TV model. By the way, the last interview we did with Alonso back in June of 2015, he said, this all grows out of our larger philosophy that the comic industry is moving to a seasonal model that isn't too unlike what you see with your favorite binge-worthy TV shows.
Mm-hmm.
All new, all different Marvel every year or so. You offer a new story or direction that provides an accessible entry point to new readers and builds on the experience you've been providing your current readers. So, yeah, that's just this constant number one is just part of the business plan.
Absolutely. But as you were talking about that, I was trying to think, you know, because I'm not fundamentally opposed to that philosophy. I am fundamentally annoyed by the execution of it at the two companies, in so much as more at DC right now with I use the term reboot to mean that they have, you know, nullified the history of the character and they're reasserting a new one. Okay. Yeah, I think you sometimes use it in a slightly different context.
That is true. I look much more just what's, can I buy the next issue or do I have to get a new number one?
To me, that's a revoluming, a relaunch. If they change the direction, it's a retooling.
Okay. But
a reboot, to me, is very specifically we've thrown the baby out with the bathwater to a degree. And DC has done that enough times. I don't mind every year let's start a new initiative, a new arc, a new big bad, or whatever. A matter of fact, I watch a ton of TV shows. I'm very familiar with the seasonal model. I watch the Super Sentai and Power Rangers show. It's very much, here's the year storyline, done, let's go do another one. Sometimes same characters with Power Rangers, and Sentai, it's almost always a different group of characters. There's some, I don't say repetition, but familiarity. Got a Red Ranger, all this stuff. So I'm very familiar and very comfortable with that model, and it works great. You can basically shake things up every year, go in another direction, but replay similar story beats, have them come out differently, whatever. It bothers me, though, when, okay, wait, who's Hawkman this month? You know, how many Robins were there? Who was the original Titans? That kind of obliteration of the backstory. And to me, the continuity versus the seasonal model. The seasonal model can work for comics, but they need to do it in a way that has the accessibility and the entry points without bumping out readers and having the exit ramps. And I think the let's go with a miniseries, let's go with the arcs that have clear jumping on points, that means you're saying, you know, 5 out of 6 months, don't bother with our story, you missed the entry ramp. That's a fundamentally stupid way for a commercial business to run. Now, from a creative standpoint, I get the necessity of it. If every month you're having to say that Wolverine's the best that he is at what he does, and, you know, Storm has claustrophobia, and, you know, Cyclops, you know, can't control his eye blast, hence the visor and stuff, and then you read that in a trade, or you binge read a couple of issues, it's like, you know, I saw this just 20 pages ago.
But it worked for 35 years.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that amazing?
So I don't... anytime you see something that worked that long and they say it's not possible now, I always question that. My fundamental issue with the seasonal model is it needs seasonality. I'll talk about another thing kind of in the similar vein. People have taken a similar approach occasionally with professional wrestling. That, you know, WrestleMania is kind of the end of the year, like the Super Bowl or whatever, and everything kind of restarts from there and goes to the next one or whatever, however you want to look at it.
Okay, okay.
What is fundamentally different about it in comic books as opposed to television seasons is the next one still got to come out next week, next month, whatever. If you don't take some time off, it's not a seasonal. It's an ongoing concern. And trying to falsely create seasonal breaks at random intervals, just, it rubs me the wrong way, because you're essentially saying it's not an ongoing. Television, we get it. You tune in September to see the premiere. You get, okay, we're gonna resolve kind of the big cliffhanger from the end, and you're going to watch through May, be left with another cliffhanger or resolution for the year, and then you get 3-4 months off, and you start over again.
I think this is one of the places where we're coming at it with different baggage that we bring to the conversation. And I don't mean baggage in a bad way.
No, but it is. That's certainly our experience.
I completely see where you're coming from and completely agree with all of that. But I think the sticking point is, if you were to replace the term seasonality with some other term, I'm not quite sure what yet. But to me, again, the Super Sentai stuff, this has been going on for 40 years over in Japan. And it's literally all year long.
It is?
And then it's February. It's like, okay, you know, this one's wrapping up. And then in next week, we're starting the next one.
Yeah. Again, it's the sports in me. You know, I'm used, baseball season starts in April and ends in November. In October.
There's a season, there's the implication of an off-season.
Off-season, exactly.
So I think there's something about the terminology that's wrong. But there's a periodicity or periodicity or however you would say that, that could work. But I think the problem is comics have fallen into that too hard already.
Yeah.
The 6-issue arcs,
yep,
and things of that nature, it already has a staggered seasonality to it. Every title has a seasonality to it.
Yep.
In that respect, there's the 2 jumping on months or issues a year or whatever, or now 4 if we go twice monthly. And then the rest of the time where it's barrier to entry and stuff, which, again, bad for business. I don't have a fundamental problem with every 6 months, every year, every so often we're going to do a big initiative or whatever. I don't know that you should have to need to do that. I recall when I was in college, I was reading a lot of novels. I was reading Star Trek novels.
Mm-hmm.
Boom, just one came out every couple of weeks. Really, one a week, depending, you know, if you were crossing all the different franchise, you know, Next Gen, Original Trek. And then, you know, as I got older, we got then Deep Space Nine, then we got Voyager, then we got Enterprise, then we got, you know, New Frontier. Then, you know, there was always something new. So it was almost the perfect model for comics, because you had a repetitive buying pattern you could get the reader into. You were rotating creators. They all kind of knew the characters, some better than others. But it felt, again, like it was this ongoing, not continuity or timeline, because some stories were set earlier in Kirk's career, some were in the movie era, some were later, you know, whatever. They could bounce around and stuff. But it was a true shared universe. Whereas right now, the shared universe aspect at Marvel actually is not too bad. It's in some cases very strong. Other cases, it's okay. I would be a little impressed to name anywhere I think, man, that title is just totally out of sync with everything. Roll back a month or two over at DC, and there were quite a few things that was saying, this is totally out of sync with what's going on. This Justice League I'm seeing here versus in Superman versus over there, they're 3 different Justice Leagues. So I think the problem isn't how often the stories start. Do they need a seasonality for big initiatives or whatever? They need to really go back to having a good understanding and a good working model for a shared universe. You know, I think the problem, and I think the strength at Marvel right now, is not only good characters, good creators, which I could argue is true at DC as well, but they've got an editorial team that, for whatever reason, is able to get really good stories that are clicking with readers and stuff out of those creators and characters, whereas DC can't.
Absolutely. That I completely agree with and understand. I guess my issue, I don't want to put this. Comics, when I was growing up or later in my reading, high school, college, those years, already had a seasonality to it, in the fact that we got used to the event.
The summer event or the summer biweekly aspect. Yeah.
Or whatever. We got used to that. But it would go away. Now it is event. Event ends. Now we essentially have event that is the new status quo after the event. As soon as you almost settle into that next event, as soon as that event ends, event that's new status quo after that event.
No, I think you've got an excellent point because I
there's
roll
no
back.
Off, to- again, it's back to the there's no off season. There's no regular, you know, again, I'm a church person as well. In church, we have the whole Advent, Lent, Pentecost, all this, you know, the seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And we are currently after Pentecost. We are what in for years was called regular time. From Pentecost until the start of Advent, you're in just regular time. There's nothing going on the liturgical calendar.
Kind of the off season.
The off season. And Marvel just doesn't feel like there's ever an off season.
Well,
or
you know,
a regular time. Maybe off season is not the right word. Let's just have a regular time where we're not either trying to sell a new status quo or sell an event that's going to create the new status quo. Can we just hang out in the status quo? We kind of all generically know for a few months.
Well, if you're always shaking things up, that is the status quo, and you're no longer shaking things up.
Yeah. Well, yes.
But you know, your point. If I thinking roll back the clock to the 80s, the 90s.
Yep.
It was very much okay. It's that time for the annual JSA crossover.
Yep.
Oh, it's that time for the annuals at Marvel over the summer where they have the crossover events.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's the time for the event or something versus, okay, what event is there this month? Or it's been a month or two. I don't even say as a breather, but okay, now we got the next event. The lack of, and downtime's not the right term.
But the lack of comfort and normalcy. I just want normal time for a little window somewhere in the year.
Well, they should get the characters to a point where, and I don't know why they can't do it now, because they used to be able to do this forever and a day, get the characters into a status quo that you can sustain.
Yeah.
If you think about it, the Enterprise, whichever one you wish, was on a 5-year mission. You tell 5 years worth of stories in that basic status quo. Yes, there's growth, there's change, there's relationships, you know, whatever that happened. But it's not like they get a month out and then suddenly, oh, we got to turn around and go to war with the Romulans, turn around and go to war with the Klingons. Oh, the Borg have just invaded. And it's nothing but major blockbuster motion picture thing day after day after day. It wears you down.
Yeah. Well, and even the TV model we were talking about, as we talked about, there's kind of the, okay, here's the premiere.
Mm-hmm.
We're gonna you know, if it's a new season of an ongoing show, we're gonna settle whatever we really screwed up at the end of the cliffhanger.
Mm-hmm.
And there's gonna be two or three episodes, or possibly just the first segment of the first episode that deals with, okay, we're back to normal now. And then you're gonna get three or four episodes of normalcy leading into some craziness probably before what they're now calling the winter season finale, which. A whole different issue that bothers me.
The mid-season break or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah.
Before Christmas. Okay, fine. And then you're going to come back in January or February. Again, you're going to have that anywhere from one segment to one to two episodes to deal with the fallout from the mid-season finale. And then you're back into regular time for a while until you get to that cliffhanger at the end of the year. And then you actually get 3 months off.
I think the fallacy that the comic book publishers have when they think of the TV model and trying to apply it to comics is that with TV shows, you may have that arc for the first half of a season or even the full season. Or let's say it's a half. So you got the first half, the second half, two arcs, whatever. But you also have 10 episodes that have a beginning, a middle, an end, and in and of themselves
exactly
have some sense of payoff.
Yes.
And now with most of these comics, you've got the same basic story pitch that you're saying it's part one, part two, part three, part four, part five, part six. You know, there's really no new sales pitch, much less any. And there's technically the first page and the last page of a comic, but so many comics don't have any kind of narrative beginning, middle, and end.
Mm-hmm.
Or if they do, it's so minimal as to be unfulfilling. And is a 20-page comic enough room to do that kind of a storytelling? And granted, with the going more frequently, it helps.
It used to be.
It absolutely used to be. You know, I remember reading, and hell, there are some comics I've read recently that I get a surprisingly full and fulfilling story in between the covers of a single comic.
Yeah.
Versus Spidey's fighting, you know, villain du jour for the next six issues. Like it or leave it.
Well, and it's fun to go back, thanks to Marvel Unlimited, I've done some of this recently, to go back to the what we think of as landmark events. I went back and read, you know, the Armor Wars storyline.
Mm-hmm.
I went back and read Demon in a Bottle. I went back and read the Kree-Skrull War. I completely forgot most of these things took 2 to 3 issues.
Yeah. Well, I wish, I really wish DC had a similar one, because I would love to do kind of a...
Batman Year One was 4 issues.
Well, I was going to go with the JLA-JSA crossovers. Most of them were 2 or 3
most
issues.
Most of them were 2, yeah.
You know, and you need the 2 issues if for no other reason than to have a cliffhanger. Yep. It's the Doctor Who school of storytelling. You know, you look at the David Tennant run in particular. Most of them were 2-part episodes. Doctor and companion get somewhere, get entrenched in something, have a cliffhanger, and then resolve it next time.
Yep.
Maybe not everyone survives. Who knows? Whereas that's so not the model we're getting these days. And I'm willing to bet I could go through, using DC as the example, because they're at a nice ending point with the New 52 to a degree, and really just count up the number of story arcs they've told. And in most cases, if they've told 8, I'd be surprised. They haven't had the time, if you're doing six-issue arcs and stuff.
Well, and here's the other thing. For better or worse, for the most part, the most popular dramas on television are essentially police procedurals.
Mm-hmm.
They go in and out of style, but for the most part, that's been true for about 35 years.
It's a wonder they don't do crime-fighting stuff in comics anymore.
I know. But when you talk about, well, maybe the story has an overall season arc or a half-season arc, all those police procedurals tend to have those. But they do that with 5 minutes at the beginning and end of the episode. They still solve the crime every week.
Absolutely.
It may be, here's the, you know, oh, the guy behind all these last three crimes, we still got to figure out who he is.
If I were doing...
In the season arc?
A bi-weekly DC, you know, Batman book, I would try to get the Batman and detective stuff to kind of interweave. In every issue, he has solved at least 1 or 2 mysteries.
Yes.
Maybe not big things, but man, somebody's been caught. He's put somebody else on the case of so-and-so, and that's getting taken care of. And, I mean, basically, you should be able to have Arkham and Blackgate completely let everybody loose, and he's just going down the list, checking them off, and putting them back. You know, not, oh, I got to spend 6 issues going after the Joker, and then everyone else is off loose for, you know, half a year or whatever.
Well, and...
Multitask is what I'm saying.
I'm going to use this one just because I know we both watch it. Bones.
Don't watch Bones. My sister does.
Oh, okay. The Flash.
That one
I know we both watch The Flash.
Yes, yes.
There is essentially a beginning, middle, and end to every single one of those episodes.
Absolutely.
Some new bad guy comes to town. Barry and team have to figure out who he is. Is he really bad or just misunderstood?
Mm-hmm.
And either help the misunderstood person become a contributing member of society or stop the bad one.
Mm-hmm.
And by the end of the episode, that's been done. Arguably, you could argue the last 3 episodes this year that didn't happen, but okay, fine. You got 1 3-issue or 3-episode arc as the big finale.
But fine. I think even in those cases, while it may have been a little off quote-unquote formula, there was a very definite beginning, middle, and end, and strong story beats. Maybe it was a cliffhanger or revelation, whatever.
Yeah.
But everything ended with a, okay, I need time to digest this.
Yeah.
And most comics, they just kind of get to the pausing point of a chapter break.
Yeah.
And until they get out of telling chapters of a story and telling stories, they've got problems.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, you look at how many of these comics, and I've said it before, I'll say it again, are, you know, 30, 40,000 or below. It's just, this is why DC's having to rebirth things.
That's why Marvel's having to figure out a way to come up with the all new, different now than every 6 months, too.
It would be difficult and challenging, but I think it would be doable for, like, the X-Men. It's a weekly book now. Just do it that way. You follow different teams at different times, but not, okay, every 3rd week is this book or this team, every other week is this team or whatever. It interflows, it interweaves, and everything is centered around the mansion and where is so-and-so, and have people, you know, Kitty Pryde's maybe a bad example. She's off in space, but so-and-so's over with this team. Oh, they come back. Oh, she's going to go with this one, or they're going to go with that one to, because they like being out in the field or whatever. You know, have something that's more fluid, and don't be taking four different stories and then just putting them under one title. Interweave the stories to where they flow into one timeline. I'm trying to think of a show that did this and did this well, and I'm having a hard time thinking of one that's really kind of balanced this sort of a thing. But maybe
I would argue back to the comic realm that the mid-90s Superman did it very well.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
The old Shields numbering, there was a book every week, but if you sat back and just read action, you could follow a story, or just Superman, or just Man, whichever one of the... But there was a book every week that also all flowed and made sense.
Yeah, but and I'm going to use Marvel as an example, although they're doing all right. They don't need to change anything. They're not broken.
Mm-hmm.
They could do a title that is The X-Men. Weekly book, again, follow the X-Men. Another one, The Avengers. Mm-hmm. Just drop all the damn adjectives, you know? And you've got, okay, we're going to spend a little time at the mansion, a little time at the tower, at the theater, you know, wherever the various Avengers happen to be based. Have enough of a through line, be it Jarvis or whatever, to kind of connect everything together. And get it to where you're getting enough of every story in every issue that it just... I don't say it has a soap opera feel to it, but I think you know where I'm going with that. Something where there's not the, well, I'm done with this arc, I'm out.
And to be fair, minus the part where they upset everybody to get there, mm-hmm. Spider-Man did it.
Absolutely, yes.
When Steve Wacker had that 3-a-month thing rolling for those 2 or 3 years, it was done and done well. They got rid of all the adjectives, put out one book, put it out 3 times a month, and you got fairly within, you know, most of those stories were 2 to 3 issue length stories.
But that's the one thing I say I would do differently than that, is Spidey was usually just worried about the one kind of quote-unquote case he was working on,
mm-hmm.
even if 3 other villains are out and loose.
Mm-hmm.
There needs to be a little bit more of, this is just his life, he's got a lot going on.
Yeah.
But, you know, Marvel is doing well enough. They've got...
they don't need to do it.
They're not. I think they should clean stuff up. I think they could do better, whatever. But they're not doing the least bit bad. They've got so many titles in the top 50 or whatever. It's not even funny. Plus, they've got a lot of them, you know, going the next couple of ranks down or whatever. DC is the one that I don't think they're doing Rebirth just because, hey, it seems like a cool idea to end all the titles at 52.
Of course not.
They've flat out stated apathy. From the readers, the characters are off message, off model, whatever, and things got out of control.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at, you know, the titles they've doubled down on and stuff like that. And on the one hand, I think having fewer titles makes sense. Having them more frequently should help story momentum. I do take issue when they say, you know, we're not going to do Gotham by Midnight. We'll just take that story and tell it in Batman. Really? Now, if I take that literally as exactly what was said, and that is exactly what Dan DiDio said at one point, then you're going to take a 6-issue arc of that and kind of co-opt the Batman title. Maybe he'll be involved, whatever, but it's not really a Batman story. It's a Gotham by Midnight story, just taking the issues of Batman. That's not what I want. You know, I don't think the reason some of those things sold not so well is because of the title on the cover. It's just, is that what people want to read or not? And frankly, that's where I think DC is most at risk. All of this that they're doing with Rebirth is because they feel what they're doing now is they've disconnected the readers from the characters. I would agree with that. But they're having – Geoff Johns apparently spent lots and lots of time with the creative teams, kind of this is what the character is and whatnot. And I recently re-listened to the Mayo Report special I did in 2011 where I interviewed John Rood and Bob Wayne.
Yep.
Right before the New 52. And there are a number of things that were similarities. Oh, we're retelling, reassessing how we tell stories. I mean, there's the certain things you expect them to just say. You know, we're going to do better. You want better storytelling, we'll do better storytelling. Oh, you want less cover gimmicks, we'll do less. You know, it's kind of, you're not going to have like a presidential candidate saying, I'm going to go to war, I'm going to raise taxes, and I'm going to make your life miserable. They're just not going to say that. Same with publishers. They're going to, I don't say tell you what you want to hear, but certain talking points. But one of the comments that was made by, I think it was Bob Wayne, was something around the characters we think we know of DC's. as if they have special knowledge of these characters that we just, as readers, don't have. And I'm not saying they don't. They own the characters. They can do whatever the hell they want with them. But if we don't know the characters, it's their fault for not having told us who they are or confusing us as to who they are.
And to be fair, while you say all that, everything you just said sounds good. The scary part was the slightly less fanfare version of the announcement is, oh yeah, this rebirth thing's actually a 2-year-long story.
There are story elements that will go on for years.
Again!
They flat out said it is not a 2-year story.
Okay. Again, give me some regular time.
I hope we're going to get some quote unquote regular time in whatever the new status quo is. But that was dramatic lightning and thunder outside my window. If you heard that, really well timed too.
It was.
But I don't know how much time we're going to get on this. I don't know how quickly they're going to tell stories. If we're going to have issue arcs, if we're going to be actually telling stories at a faster pace that it feels like we spend more time in this world.
Now, I will say this. For what me and you talk about, there's always the possibility we are just way out of touch with what the average reader wants. Because as I point out, the issues that do the stories we've seen do really well. Arguably the best thing going at DC for the last few years has been Batman.
Mm-hmm.
Arguably the best thing going at Spider-Man is, or at Marvel's Spider-Man.
Star Wars, but then Spider-Man, yes.
Yeah, well, okay. Yeah, okay.
In their superhero universe, yes.
Well, even Star Wars. I'll include Star Wars, because I think Star Wars is a good choice, too. Star Wars doing well in their superhero universe, Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
In the Independence, it's Walking Dead.
Yes.
Everything we just said about wanting shorter stories and things happening in each issue and resolution is not true of any of those books.
Let me clarify. I'm not saying I want shorter stories. I don't want 6-issue arcs. What I want, because I know not wanting 6-issue arcs sounds like I want shorter stories. I want a window into the life of the character. What I feel we are getting in Star Wars, and to a little bit lesser degree, but in Spider-Man, is I've just got a viewport into Luke or Peter's world. And it's not like I'm just getting snippets and edited chunks in a prepackaged version. Part of what worked in the Superman Shield era of the Superman books, there was one Superman. I was following him on a weekly basis. I feel like at times there are 4 or 5 different Supermen that have been floating around for DC for a few years, even to a degree before New 52.
Well, certainly, I think we can all admit there was explicitly at least 2, probably 2.5
but
recently.
I'm not saying every issue's got to be a done-in-one.
Mm.
It's got to feel like there is a timeline to be had there. I know where I'm at in the timeline. There's consistency. It feels real, not like a put-on performance. Which, I mean, these are put-on performance. They're stories written for us. I get that. But the eras I have enjoyed the most of characters is what is Barry Allen going to do this month in The Flash? You know, what's going on with Firestorm, the Justice League, or the Teen Titans? Again, hardcore DC fan growing up. What's happening with the X-Men this month? What's going on with the Avengers? Oh, Cap's over in Quasar training him. Oh, he's over in Thunderstrike training him. Oh, they're all over in the Avengers. They're referencing those things. It all happened. I get the timeline. It's coming out as I'm reading it. It's happening. I don't feel that way, particularly at DC of late. They took baby out with the bathwater. Are they going to put it back in? Are they just going to drown the baby? Don't know. But to me, they're in such a precarious position at DC of every time in the past they've done this, they've done it by, well, we've made mistakes, so we're going to change the backstory and kind of put it how it should have been and go with that. But not everybody's on board, so they're referencing stuff that couldn't have happened, didn't happen, should have happened, would have happened, but it's like, I don't know what's going on anymore. And there comes a point where it's like, you know what? I'm tired of this. You know? That's, I think, a lot of why these sales are where they're at. You know, for Superman 51 to be selling around 38,000, Flash 50 around 35,000, Green Lantern 51, 32,000, 33,000, you know, Wonder Woman under 30,000 for issue 51. These are top tier characters, some of which were just in a movie recently, you know, but movies don't impact comic book sales one iota for the most part. There are a couple exceptions here and there, but normally they influence trade sales for like a Watchmen kind of direct connect thing. They've shown that some of these exact characters, Green Arrow, Flash, etc., can be immensely popular to an incredibly wide audience on television. They just need to take what's but take the storytelling structure style that works there. And this is not a TV season thing. This is how you actually tell the specific stories within the season. And maybe you will have Green Arrow 51 that's selling, you know, 21,168. Maybe you could do better than that. You know, again, fourth season of a TV show, and the thing's barely, depending how you look at it, above cancellation numbers. Yet they're going to double down and on it with Rebirth.
Well, and it is amazing. This, to me, you mentioned The Flash. Where is The Flash selling?
Flash is at rank 51. Issue 50 did 35,159.
35,000.
Yes.
The Flash television show averages 3.35 million viewers.
So we're off by a few orders of magnitude. I don't expect everyone watching Flash to pick up the comic.
I don't either.
I don't even expect necessarily 1 out of 10. 1 out of 1,000? Yeah.
We're currently at 1 out of 100, right? 10% would be 300,000. 1% would be 30,000.
Okay. 1 out of 100. You're right.
If you can just get that to 2%, which doesn't seem beyond the pale in crazy possibilities.
Suddenly it's a top 10 book.
Exactly. I'm not asking for 1 out of 10. I'm asking for 1 out of 50.
This is the exact point I made when the Iron Man films were first released. If 1% of the people who had bought Iron Man on DVD when it first came out that weekend, it would have doubled the sales of the comic. I don't think that's unreasonable. I don't think that's undoable. But there's a world of difference between putting down your 10, 15, 20 bucks to get a two-hour movie that's just amazing, and putting, you know, right now, let's see, Iron Man would be
$5.
$3.99, yeah.
Or $3.99?
Invincible. I was going to the cheaper one.
Fair enough.
I was going with the more Iron Man book.
There you go.
Or Flash. In this case, issue 50 was $4.99. Typically, it'd be $2.99.
Yeah, it's going to be $3.
It comes down to, do you have the payback in terms of, did you get enjoyment out of that story? Did it leave you fulfilled, or did you think, wow, I got a sixth of a story?
And again, I think DC is very often talked about, oh, we'd like to get our characters more in line with the TV universe. We'd like to get our characters more in line with the movie universe. Yeah, we've heard those things out of publishers. What me and you just spent the last 45 minutes talking about, what we have not heard, we would like to get the storytelling style more in line with the 3 million people a week enjoy the storytelling style. If you spent less time worrying about, well, if he's got this cousin or that, how about you just focus on tell the same type of story?
Yeah, tell the same quality of story, the same, I mean, emotional heartbeat moments and stuff that we get in some of these shows, the comedic moments, the action adventure stuff. They cover
such
a wide basis.
Same resolution in an episode.
Yeah, absolutely the resolution and stuff. It's something that the current mindset is it can't be done, the audience doesn't want it, yet, again, it worked so well for so long, I've got to think that if somebody were to, and a few titles are, to lesser degrees, Mockingbird, Black Widow to a lesser degree, a few of these are telling almost, not done in one, but coherent in one, I think is the term I would
exactly,
use.
There you go.
Coherent in one stories that are building up to something. But you feel like you got something out of the issue. You know, that's what we used to get back in the 80s and stuff when I got hooked on comics. I didn't need to wait 6 issues for villain du jour to get taken out or whatever and have twists, turns, and whatever, exposition and soliloquies and stuff. Hell, in the course of a single issue, well, I got a lot of that stuff. And it kept me hooked because things were happening, things that mattered. The characters had lives. The stories were progressing. You know, you look at how long an average kind of story time takes for a 6-issue arc. Often, it's anywhere between an afternoon to a week. Yet it took you 6 months to get that story. it's hard to maintain momentum as a reader at that point. And it's hard to build up a backstory, establish the character, and build a history for them. And people can say, oh, but I don't want continuity. I'm going to say you got to have continuity. I'm going to say you got to have some history. You know, if the character is just newly born every issue, that's hard to deal with. I mean, people love sitcoms, and that's the nature of sitcoms, but I think...
But it's not.
Fair point. You go, you look at a long-lasting sitcom, and you look at the character at the beginning and the character at the end, and they are fundamentally changed, grown, and evolved.
Oh, sitcoms. Most popular sitcom on television, still The Big Bang Theory.
Mm-hmm.
I happen to own them all, and when I can't sleep sometimes late at night, I'll just throw discs in. And after watching the season finale, I had one of those nights I couldn't sleep. I threw in, I believe, season one. I actually watched the first four or five episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Those characters have grown tremendously in those 8 years. And you had a bunch of single people that now are mostly married. The characters or the wives didn't even exist. The idea that it's a clean slate and it's the same every, not even close.
What's interesting is their status quo has radically evolved. And I say evolved, not just changed. I mean, they built up to all of those things. Yet, using Big Bang as an example, Sheldon is still fundamentally Sheldon.
Absolutely.
He's tweaked, he's grown, he's got different nuances now, I would imagine, than then. But it's not like they had to completely, you know, brainwash him, wipe him clean, and have him come out as the new Sheldon.
Nope.
You know, five, six times. You know? And you... How long has this show been on? Eight seasons?
Yes.
There is Walking Dead and Usagi Yojimbo are probably the only comics on this list that were coming, Sonic the Hedgehog and G.I. Joe, were the only ones coming out when that show started, I think. Maybe Invincible and Simpsons. Okay, so half dozen, maybe.
And actually, I take back everything I said. I own eight seasons on DVD. Season 9 aired this year, so it's 9.
Same but idea.
Same. Yeah, it started in 2007. Started in the fall of 2007.
I don't think that knocked any of the six comics I was saying out.
Not at all.
But you look at how many times they've had to radically change Batman, Superman, Iron Man, or whomever, Captain America, Thor. And it used to be that you could have a character, this is Batman, and tell stories about that Batman for decades. Because he was a cool character. There's a lot to do with him.
Yep.
There's a timelessness to certain of these characters that they've lost.
Well, and I've argued against this for years. The urge to replace characters drives me up a wall. There's just something in the zeitgeist, in the culture. You say Bruce Wayne, people know he's Batman. You say Peter Parker, people know he's Spider-Man. We're getting to the point where you say Tony Stark, they know he's Iron Man. You say Steve Rogers, they know he's Captain America.
Yeah.
Why they feel the need to constantly mess with that is beyond me.
I, a couple of jobs back, had a, and this was during the Electric Blue Lightning Superman mode.
Oh, me and my wife were actually discussing that just last night.
I had a desktop screen with him on it.
Huh?
Found a nice image, cleaned it up, fit great. Coworker comes over. He's like, who's that? And I'm like, it's Superman. He's like, no, it's not. And you know what? He's kind of right.
Exactly.
You know, and this, to me, this goes back to the Super Sentai stuff and the Power Rangers. They don't change who was upcoming movie aside, who the original Red Ranger was. He was always who it was and stuff. But you get a new Red Ranger of a new team every year, pretty much, or every other year now. It's a way that you can do the refreshing without diminishing who you had before. So I think you could have, again, it's harder with the comics because you went for decades with Superman was Superman was Superman, Cap was Cap was Cap, Thor was Thor, etc.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, you got Beta Ray Bill, then you got, you know, Rhodey as Iron Man, then you got, you know, Azrael as Batman. But now it's like every few months, not quite every few months, but you know what I mean? It's just that's a go-to story hook because, ooh, we've got to shake things up.
Yeah, to me, that's not interesting.
It's not sustainable. If you've got a character...
You can continuously throw somebody else in a suit forever. We'll make this one this ethnicity, this one this gender, this one this, you know, whatever, and try to sell that as the interesting point. That's not the interesting point about any of those people.
But it's a fundamentally different kind of a property at that point.
Yeah.
Now you're playing, going to a sports team kind of a metaphor. You're rooting for the uniforms, not the team necessarily. And that's the direction they've taken stuff. And when I see so many things at such low numbers, you know, again, you look at how many comic book TV show based TV shows and movies and video games and whatnot are out there. And then you look at where these things are selling. Again, first issues doesn't matter. Stuff's going to drop. One interesting second issue we have this time around at rank 22, mm-hmm. Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's talk about that.
It dropped by half, but it's at 58,975 units. And it's still on, not Mighty Morphin, but Power Rangers is still on TV. They've got the movie. There's a huge fan base out there for this stuff. These are sustainable numbers. Now, whether
and they're
it
renewing.
Will sustain.
You know, as you know, I never watched a single Power Rangers anything.
Mm-hmm.
I knew nothing about the Power Rangers until 6 months ago. One day, my son came home from school and said his friends were all talking about the Power Rangers. What are the Power Rangers? I went to Netflix, went, wow, there's all of them. Let's watch one.
Mm-hmm.
He loves it. My son is still absolutely head over heels for the Power Rangers. I'm enjoying them. They're decent. I will say this. Him and me do seem to agree the more recent ones are better than some of the older ones.
Oh, some of the early ones I think are a little tough to watch. Don't get me wrong. It's a little pokey. And there's certain ones I just can't wrap my mind around. That wait, how did that villain get created again? It's a purse and a vacuum cleaner.
Well, you know, the one of the current villains is, you know, essentially a crazy chef, but somehow he's entertaining as all heck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're wacky and they're weird, but they're fun. And it's a show that every season or two, new group of characters, you get a new team dynamic, but there's the familiarity of the structure, the format, the basic premise, different villains.
Mm-hmm.
They'll often do crossovers with past teams and stuff. Less so on Power Rangers, more so on Super Sentai. It's a formula that works, and there's no reason you couldn't have this is this year's group of X-Men. Now, you run the risk of actually aging characters at that point, which in comics is maybe a bit of a no-no since you'd only get two stories a year, maybe four now, twice weekly or twice monthly. Whereas aging actors, that's just going to happen. You know,
that's why The Simpsons is the longest running sitcom in television history and always will be.
Yep.
The children never aged. When you start a show with two, you know, family with two kids and they're 10 and 15, that show is fundamentally different 5 years down the road.
Yes.
And Bart and Lisa never aged.
Yeah. And
that's why it's on at season 26.
Yeah, again, nothing will ever be able to compete with that because just keeping actors that long,
it's
I'm surprised they can keep the voice actors that long, to be honest. It's less of a time commitment, but still. You know, I just, again, I look at this list and I look at the huge gulf sales-wise between Marvel and DC. And it's historically typically been there. DC's mm-hmm. almost always been the underdog. DC's stand for the longest time is very much they don't see themselves necessarily in direct competition with Marvel, but just telling good stories and doing the best they can do. Mm-hmm. You know, sure, they'd love to have great sales and stuff, but it's not like they're doing that come hell or high water. You know, and again, holding the line at $2.99, trying to I don't say get back to fundamentals, but try to course correct.
I will say this. For all the doom and gloom and negatives we've said, something that we've said a few times that I do want to point out, I think we dismiss too easily. Well, there's the number ones, and those don't count.
They don't count. I don't say they don't count. They're not indicative of sales trends.
Okay, I agree with. But let me just kind of make this point. I do think the great sales of the number ones do show something. There's a market of people that are really interested and want to read these books.
And
they just get disappointed over and over again.
I don't know. If we didn't have all these incentive covers, I'd be more likely to agree with you.
Your argument is they're not actually selling through.
Whether they're selling through or not, I don't know how many are getting read.
Okay. But I would point to the huge success of the number ones. With the incentive covers, it's one thing, but a lot. Number ones have always sold better. There is something that nags at the back. And, you know, like I said, Rebirth just came out yesterday. Mm-hmm. There's a forum thread going about it. We're all talking about it. those people I haven't read since the New 52, I haven't read since then, I dropped off, I'm coming back. We want, or not, when I say we, I'm just kind of, there's an audience here that wants to love our Batman, our Superman, our yes. Spider-Man. And we always come back. If some publisher can figure out just how not to disappoint as many people as they can, those number one sales, I think, would be sustainable.
It's almost they need to treat this as a game of Kohlrami from Next Generation of, you got to play not to lose.
Yeah.
You know, and if you can play to not lose too many readers, or maybe not any, you win. Just because you can outlast everybody.
But it's not even, you know, like I said, those number one sales to me do indicate there's a group of people out there that want to like these stories. I mean, the success of the New 52, where DC arguably more so than any other time in the last 10 years, legitimately brought a large number of people back into comic book shops to check them out. Why? Because they went, oh yeah, I love Batman. Maybe there's a comic book that I can read that's good. I love Superman. I love these characters.
There's no excuse. Lost them all. There's no excuse for comics to be selling the way they are. Whether, you know, it's the number ones that show there's a large audience, or, I don't know, maybe some of the top grossing movies of all time are comic book based now.
And the TV shows.
Or the wealth of TV shows or video games. I mean, it's mainstream entertainment now.
Yeah.
Period. So there's no derogatory aspect. Oh, you read comics. People, you know, like you said, they want to read this stuff. They love these characters. They are not all adolescent power fantasies or whatever. Maybe they are, but everyone likes them. So who cares? You know, it's there is a fundamentally wider audience out there that either the current stories, the current market structure, or something is just precluding that connection from being made. I know some people, hey, the digital stuff is a good on-ramp. I agree that it is. If it's good enough or not, don't know. But I know that there, in my circle of friends and coworkers and whatnot, the number of people that are excited and interested about these characters in the movies, the TV shows, is huge. The number of people who are actually reading the comics, not so much. Marvel Digital and Comics Unlimited and stuff like that, certainly helping. But we've gotten such wide stream acceptance of these properties, these characters, and the hobby in general. I mean, people, oh, you're going to a comic book convention. That's so cool. Of course, it's usually followed up by who are you dressing up as? And I say, nobody. but it's at least, they're not looking at me funny like, you know, it's like get out of your mom's basement kind of a thing. It's like, no, I got my own house. Thanks. Again, fundamentally different world than where it was back in the day, but sales still not so great and going down. And again, natural cycle. Hey, this title doesn't work so well. Okay, great. You know, maybe it's not such a good idea to be doing another Howard the Duck series or, you know, The Vision or All New Inhumans or All New Hawkeye. So, okay, we'll end those. We'll try something else. And there's a, whether that's a seasonal model or just a throw something into the wall and see what sticks, a tomato, tomato, maybe. Or tomato, potato. I don't know.
I don't think you need a seasonal model. You just need to find a season everyone likes.
Again, I think they're misusing the term season, and I think they're using it as a way to excuse away the constant revoluming of titles.
Yes. Well, you know, again, however you want to look at it, I'd love to find a volume that people like as opposed to needing a new volume all the time.
Or the ability to just switch creative teams and keep the volume going. If you've got, again, shared universe and something that works. Mm-hmm. Obviously, creator-owned, hey, creator quits, it's over. I get it. And I want it that way to a degree. One question I got recently, actually this morning on email, I want to talk about just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
It was from a PhD candidate looking in, trying to figure out how comic book movie theater releases impact comic book sales. And I don't know this person's background. He's in the economics department at a university. Nathan is the guy. It was some good questions, but I'm going to hazard a few guesses. I'm going to guess Nathan is not really a comic book reader, but is one of these other people we talk about of really interested in the genre, the material, the stuff, maybe more the movies than the comics. Awesome. Great. But his basic question was around comic book print runs. And he was looking at the past comic sales I've got on the website and on comic book resources and such. And he noticed some titles entering and exiting the top 300 sales over a period of many years. And the example he used was the first issues of Guardians of the Galaxy. Made it in the top 300 list in May 2008 and then March, April of 2013. And that's most likely driven by the movie release in 2014 was his supposition. He was trying to understand, well, what the hell happened between 2008 and 2013? Lack of demand, lack of availability, are those the same thing? Kind of what's going on? And his assumption was that maybe that Guardians of the Galaxy number one could have made the top 300 list between May 2008 and March 2013 if there was either sufficient demand or sufficient supply. And again, do publishers print a certain amount of copies of an issue? Do they determine there's, how do they do another batch and another printing or whatever? Or is there a point at which they just won't reprint an issue? And he was also wondering about the Diamond shipping list, if that was kind of the represented the universe of comics available for purchase at a comic store over that time period. And I've sent him a quick reply, but it was a good question. It was fun to see a question coming from kind of outside the hobby. At least that's my take on it. Because it shows just what a different perspective there is on this. And I think Nathan was potentially misunderstanding a few things. Like specifically the Guardians of the Galaxy that was in the top 300 back in 2008 at rank 61 in May 2008 with, I think, 36,249. Yes, I did look this up. I don't just know these things. And the Guardians of the Galaxy, number one, which is at rank one in March 2013 with 211,312 units. They're totally two completely different comic books. The one in 2008 was written by Dan Abnett and Andy Landing, drawn by Paul Pelletier. The one in 2013, Brian Michael Bendis, and drawn by Steve McNiven. Guess what? Bendis and McNiven, top-tier talent. Abnett and Landing and Pelletier, not so much. They're good talent, don't get me wrong, but I don't think anyone in the industry is going to say, you know, that Abnett and Landing, they're right up there with Bendis. Just in the case. So I think people outside the hobby, this constant, you know, we've got another number one. You know, they don't necessarily see it as another number one. They may be thinking it's the same thing. It just popped back up on the list. You know, I'm not sure how some of this is getting perceived outside. But again, there's the supposition, well, you know, it's a new one. There was the movie in 2014. That must have been why that one sold better. Versus, it's the difference between having just a couple of actors or, you know, Oscar award-winning, top-tier, you know, bankable actors or something, if you know what I mean.
It's interesting he chose Guardians of the Galaxy. Only because I've said this on this very show, I have argued if there is a case to be made for movies helping a comic book make comic book sales, Guardians of the Galaxy is your best case argument. Let's look right now. The issue that's on this list is ranked 45.
Yep.
Issue 7 at 40,212. The 40,212 is not that impressive. However, rank 45 is. Guardians of the Galaxy, well into its run, competing with a bunch of number ones, competing with a bunch of Star Wars, competing with a bunch of other stuff, still being in the top 50, I still think is attributable to the movies.
You know who the writer of that issue is?
Who is the writer of that issue?
Brian Michael Bendis.
Okay. Still down 16% from last time.
My point is, he is a name writer. Whether you like his decompression or not,
okay,
I think a title with him on it potentially is going to sell better than a title with some other good, but not A-list. And you could argue whether Bendis, since he's not in the limelight as much at Marvel anymore, you know, is as A-list as he used to be. He's certainly not at the peak of his career, but I don't think he's, like, taking a tumble either.
I agree with all that. I think, I'm not saying it's the case. I'm saying if you want to make the case,
I think the movie
Guardians of the Galaxy is your best shot at making the case.
I would agree with that.
Certainly didn't happen anywhere else.
Because I think they took a property that's a what the hell is that for the mainstream?
Yep.
And firmly put it on the map.
Exactly.
And did that have some spillover to here? Yeah, maybe, possibly. But it's also not such that we can say, you know, it was selling crappy before movie comes out. Boom, it's top of the charts kind of a thing. Let's go back to Deadpool that we talked about a little earlier and didn't quite get to. Rank number 16, issue number 10 of Deadpool, 64,508 units. It's up about 11% from the previous. But it just had, back in February, really popular movie that just came out on Blu-ray and DVD.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that we've seen it kind of skyrocket up in sales.
It's been there. That's the thing. Deadpool's been there before the movies. The popularity of the character got that film made. Deadpool was a two-way street. I don't think there are comic readers, and maybe this is what makes Guardians different. If you start with the assumption that the only people that read comics are people that already go into comic stores, we're not making new readers. That's, yeah, and again, it's got flaws, but let's just go with that as a premise. People who went into comic book stores and go into comic book stores, either buy Deadpool or don't buy Deadpool, have an opinion about Deadpool.
Okay.
And if they went and saw the movie and enjoyed it or not, that opinion probably didn't change. Therefore, they either still buy Deadpool or still don't buy Deadpool.
So if that's the case, why would it be any different for a different property?
Because Guardians of the Galaxy, I didn't know anything about. I was introduced to Guardians of the Galaxy back in that Abnett Landing run.
Right.
That was phenomenal.
And again, many years before the movie came out.
Yes. But at the time, I was unfamiliar with them. I read a few of those and had forgotten about them again.
Okay.
The movie took me, someone who goes into a comic store regularly, and kind of went, oh yeah, the Guardians. And again, as a Marvel Unlimited guy, it's kind of weird because it's not like I started buying it, but I have begun reading them, which if it wasn't for the movie, I might not have, which means if I was buying Marvel books weekly, I might have started buying them, which without the movie probably wouldn't have happened.
What I'm hearing out of all of this is the comics aren't making people fans of the characters as much as the movies can.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Yeah.
Now, whether that turns them into comic book readers is another matter.
Exactly.
But I think a lot of people will read some of the stuff, be it Guardians, be it Daredevil, Iron Man, Captain America, Flash, Green Arrow, Supergirl. It's okay. But then they'll watch the TV show or the movie and wow, I really like this character.
Yeah.
And in some cases, it's the same character in the comics as the show. In some cases, it's really not. I don't know if that matters, though. Because well, I would argue the Guardians in the comics and the Guardians that then became in the movie, the Guardians before the movie and then the Guardians that were in the movie, it was a pretty different take.
It was, I would argue, the exact take that was the one I was reading back then.
I don't recall the Star-Lord Peter Quill being that kind of
humorous.
And
you're minus a Nova Nova, who was very important to those stories at that time. I agree.
Now, that having been said, I really enjoyed the movie, and I can see why it made people fans.
Yeah. And back to the, does it have a direct effect? No. But I know I first walked into a comic store because of syndicated 1966 Batman and 1985 G.I. Joe cartoon.
I think it doesn't impact specific titles, but I certainly think these movies and TV shows make somebody so much more predisposed to actually go read the comic.
Yes. And as it turns out, there's a lot of, for good or bad, there are some psychological traits and personality tics that comic readers tend to have.
Mm-hmm.
And as it turns out, I have most of them. So had I seen those shows and not necessarily had that personality, I probably wouldn't have become a comic book reader.
Some people are just inherently likely to be readers, some are not.
But since I saw those, it gave me a reason to go to comics, which it turns out I fit right in with.
Well, I do think there's a matter of exposing somebody to a property, and if it clicks with them, they may go back to that source material.
Yeah.
The Future Quest comic came out,
mm-hmm.
and as I was doing a little research prepping for the Weekly Comic Spotlight where Drew and I discuss it, I'm looking around. It's like, okay, I want to make sure I know which cartoons, which character came from, get, you know, okay, the Herculoids, what were all their names, all that kind of crap. And of course, in the process of doing this, I wandered across, you know, the IMDb page for one of them. It's got the link to Amazon. I get the Amazon. Next thing I know, I've got a couple of things sitting in my shopping cart that I haven't bought yet, but, you know, the DVD collections of all of these old cartoons.
Mm-hmm.
Because the comic clicked with me. And it's not, you know, if I go to a movie and say, wow, that's a really cool story, maybe I'll follow that actor, that writer, that property back to, you know, other works. And there's something about, be it a live action or animated show with sound, with dialogue, with charismatic either actors or voice actors, that is so much more able to win somebody over than just words on a page, even if there's great art next to the words on the page. So, I mean, I totally get that whole aspect of it. But while I think those things make somebody more predisposed to walk into a comic store or pick up the Comixology app or whatever and read stuff, we were talking earlier about what a tiny percentage conversion rate you would need, essentially a 1% conversion rate, which is on par with a direct mail campaign with a not-so-targeted mailing list. It's a reasonable expectation, and we're not getting it.
Fair enough.
Know?
Well, and I will say, and I think it's a symbiotic relationship as well. I went to see Guardians of the Galaxy because I'm a comic book fan.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm a comic book fan, I went to see the movie. Because I saw the movie and the fact that Jurassic World came out just after it and all that, I became a Chris Pratt fan. I will go see any movie he's in, whatever the next one is.
Mm-hmm.
Because he made me a fan of a movie I probably only stepped into because I read comic books. As it turns out, then, of course, I have small children. The Lego movie, you got the Lego movie, the Jurassic Park movie, and yeah. Guardians all at the same time. All of a sudden, he was all over. I went, okay, this guy's actually really entertaining and charismatic, and I enjoy him.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, I will go see whatever he does.
Well, it's one of those things, you know, no matter how you get the person, you know, in the door or whatever, if you can get them hooked and get them onto that next property, that next thing, like you said, it can be a virtuous cycle.
Yes.
You know, oh, I enjoyed his work here. I'll go follow it there. I enjoyed that. That introduced me to this. I'm following this now. You know, this is how I read everything or why I read everything. I blame Secret Wars, the original. It's something that I think all of this stuff helps sales nominally, but it's never... You know, again, somebody trying to do this direct connective. Well, this was around the time of the movie. It sold better. Ergo, it must be this cause effect.
No, absolutely not. As you pointed out, I think the one place about the time of the Watchmen movie, I seem to remember the Watchmen trade all of a sudden being in the top 10 on the trade list again.
Absolutely.
That's one of the few times I went, okay, that's probably a direct result of the movie.
But that's also a direct result of the marketing push DC did to get all those copies out there.
Absolutely.
And they went hog wild on it, as they well should. But also, it's one of those cases where the movie is adapting this particular story. And at the time, that's all there was of Watchmen. Very clear. Likewise, 300, boom, get this hardcover, you're done. You know, Iron Man, oh, there's lots of Iron Man stuff. Do you want the current stuff? Do you want this story, that story, whatever? You know, it's a little harder to get somebody from Arrow to any particular Green Arrow story. So that's where I think the looser the adaptation is, or the, I don't say the less focused it is, but the less focused the source of the adaptation is, the less likely there is to be that kind of carryover.
Yeah.
And that's not a bad thing, you know? I mean, having the TV people pull from everything, take what works, and run with it, I'm all for. Again, it's resulted in some really fun TV seasons lately.
I know you've talked about it in the past, but it hasn't come up probably in 2 or 3 years. Does Watchmen still perennially show up on the top 300 trade list?
I believe so. It's one that is, it got to the point where it felt like I was always talking about it, so I kind of stopped, and it feels like I never talk about it, but it's been on the list.
It's in the top 100 this month.
It's in rank 77. It's been on the list 124 times before.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's kind of just always there. It's widely regarded to be, I don't want to say a classic of comics. I'm going to say probably the classic of comics.
I'm interested. Like I said, it's at 77. It always does well. For various reasons, I'm going to be interested to see if it makes the top 10 in the next month or two.
Yeah, I'm curious.
It would be really interesting to see if that happens or not.
Going through the rest of the list, I'm trying to see if there was anything else that was... particularly surprising. I do want to point out at rank 139, Cyborg number 10 at 15,255. Again, doubling down on this character. Their words, not mine. I love, I love the character. He was in the Super Friends. He's one of the original New Teen Titans. If they can make this character work, I really want to see that happen for multiple reasons. It's a great character. Wolfman Perez did a great job creating him, and just it's a cool character that I think can I don't say go towards diversity or whatever, but hey, if it opens it up to a wider audience of people, be it people with prosthetics or whatever, awesome. One other I kind of want to mention, just because this is one of those rare cases where I'm on that other end of the scale than I typically am. Typically, I'm the hardcore comic fan. It's like, yeah, these people are just dabbling in the property I know and love and have for years because of this movie or whatever. Rank 236, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number 57, 6,706 units, down a little bit, but this one's been kind of going a little all over the place because they've been telling apparently some really great stories.
They're great.
I haven't read, I think, ever a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle itself story. I did read the Batman crossover, loved it. Drew and I reviewed that recently.
You reviewed the final one.
Again, I was amazed to find out that this title, which is written or at least co-written by Kevin Eastman, apparently doing it, I guess, under a work-for-hire arrangement. He
has nothing to do with the ownership of the Turtles.
That is correct. He sold out to Peter Laird. Peter Laird later sold out to Nickelodeon.
Viacom.
It's now a corporate-owned property. The one hand, I hope they really got a good bonus and cashed out successfully out of that.
I will say this. While it's work for hire in the sense that he doesn't own the Turtles anymore, I believe he has some ownership stake in IDW now. So
I hope he's enjoying it and has pretty much free creative control. Yes. Because it seems to be working.
No, it's great. Unfortunately, we can get into the history of it, but the split between Eastman and Laird was not the friendliest.
Yeah, that's what I gathered when I was doing the research on the miniseries.
And interestingly, with kind of what's gone on and what's continued since then, you can now look back and argue the guy who loved the characters the most isn't the guy who won that battle.
Yeah. I mean, again, Eastman is writing the book. People seem to be really excited about it that are reading it. This is one of those properties that has had its ups and downs over the years. So I could see there having been points where it made sense to just kind of cash out and move on. But when it goes back on an upswing and somebody says, hey, you want to write it, you'd be foolish not to. But this, to me, is one of the, I don't say best creator-owned properties or creator, you know what I mean? It's one of the breakout properties of the last couple of decades. That
I'd argue it's in a class with about six books.
Which six?
Cerebus, The Turtles, G.I. Joe. Why it is a Hasbro own thing, Larry Hama's consistent guidance of the comic, I think, puts him in a special place with that book. Usagi, The Walking Dead, that and Hellboy.
I guess I was looking
those
at
those books are so unique.
You seem to be looking at it from very much a creator-centric thing. The vantage point I was coming from, and I hear what you're saying, and I agree from that perspective on those, I was looking at it as almost an unkillable property. Mm. It may go dormant for a little bit, but by God, it's going to come back. Well, and I would argue G.I. Joe fits in that too.
As would then the Transformers, which is another Hasbro property.
But I would argue Walking Dead's never gone away.
Well, but it's not nearly as old.
True.
There's multiple things. I put Dave Sim in that category because arguably Dave Sim, unlike these other things like Transformers and G.I. Joe that were corporate owned to begin with, Dave Sim and Peter and, you know, and Kevin very much came from the same school together too.
Yeah.
You know, the kind of the black and white guys that were going to do it on their own in that era.
I guess to me, Turtles is such a success story.
Yeah.
That I was amazed to find out that he's apparently, Eastman's doing it on a presumably a work for hire kind of, not necessarily literally, but again, he doesn't own the property. He's working on it.
That is absolutely true. He does not own the property.
And clearly he's got some kind of a really good deal with IDW. He's got his own little studio there. It seems to be working out well for both. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And, you know, hey, I want to see him keep doing Turtles even if I'm not reading the book, because it seems to be a really good match, him and the property, obviously. as the writer of it originally, he gets it. But I would also like to see if he gets the chance and has the inspiration, if he can do another breakout property. You know, there's so few that really kind of come on. Because, I mean, when my sister and I watched the 2014 film recently, and we did an episode on it.
I was going to say, you didn't mention that. You and Kay did a fine episode on the more recent film.
We came out of it thinking, I went into it thinking, you know, I've liked the other stuff. A little hokey at times, a little childish, but, you know, it's fun. And we just came out of it. It was such a fun movie.
And that's, I agree.
Part of why I haven't read the comics is it's so hard for a comic to give me that feeling.
Here's what I'll say. The current iteration, which I think is very good, is not quite as much fun as the movie, not nearly as much fun as the old cartoon.
But I don't think it's setting out to be either.
But I was going to say, it's solid action adventure superhero goodness.
Yeah.
And I think it's doing that very well. It is also not the biting satire that the book was with the first six issues in the Raphael spec. It's not, again, when that book first came out, it had more in common probably with, I mean, the first 10 to 15 Ninja Turtle books probably have more in common with the first 50 Cerebus books than any other comic book ever published.
Mm.
And it's not that either
anymore. Right, right. I was just, again, had such a fun time watching the movie, looking forward to the next one coming out.
Yeah. And I think that movie was unfairly or harshly judged simply because of the name Michael Bay on it.
Yes.
I don't think it's that. I think it's a much better film than some people are willing to admit.
I actually thought they made some improvements over the past origin and whatnot of the Turtles I was familiar with.
Yep.
And that says something. If you can actually take an existing property and tweak it in a way that really works with the internal DNA of it, but it was a piece that was just somehow missing before, but feels natural and works for it. It comes down to, do the people working on it have, I don't say truly understand it, but have an understanding of it that really matches the common understanding the audience has? Because I've often said TV shows, people, they have the show they set out to write, they have the show they write, they have the show we watch, and then they're writing the show they think they've written.
Yeah.
And there are four very fundamentally different stages of a show where it's like, I don't care what you set out to watch, this is why I'm watching this show. Oh, this is what you think you're writing, and now you're doing this. Oh, you're off the rails, forget it. Again, we'll see how long it takes for Rebirth to see if it goes down that line.
And sure, I think the other thing that I don't think Michael Bay or in general that film got the credit for, they made a film with essentially starring four CGI characters, and it was semi-serious. And you needed, and to be fair, Michael Bay did not direct the film. Jonathan Liebersman, I believe, did. Anyways, that's all beside the point. You need really strong actors to do it. Megan Fox is good enough, but I think what made that entire film work is two of the great actors of their generation. I don't think get enough credit. Will Arnett and William Fichtner just were phenomenal in that film, as well as the voice casting.
Well, and with Will Arnett, he was very good in a somewhat subdued, not stealing the scene kind of a way.
Absolutely.
And having a really good supporting actor like that, particularly when, like you said, most of it's CG, amazing stuff.
And like I said, I personally think Bill Fichtner's possibly the most underrated actor in the last 30 years.
Which character did he play in that?
Eric Sachs.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, got it.
Yes.
Couldn't place the actor, but yeah.
Academy Award winning, but not really.
Again, it was...
He won an Academy Award as a producer of Best Picture Crash a number of years ago, but he's never won an acting award.
details.
Also, probably most remembered by the comic book crew is the FBI agent in the second season on a Prison Break.
Haven't watched Prison Break yet.
Oh.
Actually have the DVDs. That's one I've heard enough good things about that at some point I just need to plow through.
Okay, something that every comic book fan will know. The bank president that represents the mob that takes on the Joker in the opening scene of The Dark Knight, also Bill Fichtner.
Huh.
You know, the guy says, do you know who you're stealing from? And comes out with the shotgun and tries to stop the Joker's bank robbery.
Mm.
Also him. He's a great character actor with a ton of range, from comedy to drama to everything in between.
Well, and having really good actors in, I don't say those smaller roles, because again, his role in Turtles was pivotal. Yeah. He was one of the big bads or whatever, but really filling out the ensemble of the cast with just solid people in almost every position. I don't care if they're top-notch, you know, highly recognizable actors, or just, I've seen that face somewhere before, because they've been in, like, everything under the sun, and they have that range. Lot to be said for that. So.
The one thing we haven't gotten to, and I know we've gone on really long this episode, rank 167, a book you guys reviewed that always hoped for bump at issue 4 for Faith out of Valiant. I actually am still reading and still enjoying that book. It's at 12,337 issues, slightly up. I actually think that's a really good Valiant book. It's currently the only Valiant book I'm reading.
It's also going to go to an ongoing series.
Yeah. And the young lady writing it actually used to hang out at the comic shop I frequent. So, again, it's a chance to support her.
What I like about that is it's a fun book. It's playing in and with kind of the tropes of superheroics and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's also got a lead that's very atypical.
Mm-hmm.
Overweight female and stuff. Female geek. You know, there are not many books like that, yet they're not poking fun at that or of her. It's something that has a very clear, unique identity on the shelf at a comic shelf and stuff. And that's where I think a lot of these other things just kind of blur in with the rest.
And the other thing I like about Faith, the other thing that makes her unique, particularly in current comic books, the eternal optimist. There's nothing dark and brooding about her.
Yeah.
Which is also a nice, refreshing difference in the current landscape.
It is. It is. And that's something I miss going back to, again, 80s era, particularly DC for me, but also Marvel and stuff, is Peter Parker might be down about paying the rent or whatever, but he knows he's going to be able to do it and things are not that bad.
Yeah, you know? He was Peter. It's the same thing with Superman. Clark, the various depressed Clarks we've had over the last few years, it drives me nuts.
Well, the Teen Titans, new Teen Titans. I mean, there would be angst, there would be drama, but their family, their team, they'll get through it.
Yep.
You know, that's something I feel is missing on a lot of things. One other one I want to talk about, just because I just spotted it down there, rank 216.
216, okay.
Magnetic Press, Bruce Lee, Dragon Rises number 1, 8,004 units.
Mm-hmm.
I read that. I picked that up because it's a Bruce Lee thing. I'm curious. I actually really enjoyed it. Fun stuff. It seems to really kind of capture the Bruce Lee sort of sensibility because it's starring him, but he doesn't know he's him.
Yeah, no, I remember you talking about it on a Weekly Comics spot. Yeah, it wasn't one of the three books you reviewed,
no,
but you talked about it.
No, just one of the ones in the after section, yeah. The fact it did 8,000 doesn't, you know, not too surprising. Magnetic Press, small press, this is a, you know, is it going to work or not kind of a thing.
Magnetic Press didn't help it. Plus, I think Bruce Lee this book might be 15 years too late.
Oh, probably.
I'm not sure the name Bruce Lee quite means to people under our age what it does to people our age and older.
It was funny because I think the second issue had a backup text piece or whatever where the artist was kind of talking about how he was working through certain things. And some of the feedback he'd gotten at first was his art was too Jackie Chan, not enough Bruce Lee. Because he was kind of doing a little bit more of the comedic. Because, again, I think our generation, the martial arts touchstone is Jackie Chan, not Bruce Lee. You know, because, again, I think he had to be just enough older than us to have seen the Bruce Lee stuff. You know what I mean? There's a little
bit. I don't know. I'm of that age. I do remember the late 70s, early 80s where, yes, it wasn't in his heyday anymore, but that Bruce Lee poster, we all had an older brother or a cousin that had on their wall.
We were familiar with Bruce Lee, but not necessarily the hardcore fans that we would have been, were we that older brother or whatever.
Yeah, or yes, that is true.
But we're also the ones that we have then a correspondingly potentially younger sibling that would have grown up in the Jackie Chan era. So again, like you said, maybe not 15 years too late, but a little too late, but I hope they can find the audience.
Yeah, no,
I'm enjoying what they're doing. It's a good sensibility, and I would love to see this Bruce Lee maybe team up with the Jackie Chan Adventures Jackie Chan. In other words, fictionalized versions of these two characters together would be fun. So, fun stuff. Trying to see if there's anything else that just jumps out real quick. Again, a bunch of stuff. By the point, the midpoint of the list, we're at, what, 13,561 units. So that's the median sales for the top 300.
Yep.
Like to think they could do better. We had, again, 6.7 million units all said and done. So not a horrible month, but we've had much better. This is compared to the average. Yeah, it's a little above average. Not by a whole lot, but about 100,000 or so, a little over. Price points, $399 is over two-thirds of the list. $299 is about 15% of the list. And $499 had about two dozen items and about another dozen at $350. I'm hoping that we start to see a real change in that as DC, you know, stays with the $299, gets their books a little more frequent and stuff. I think right now we've seen a little bit higher skew because of the issue 50s and stuff like that over at DC. But I think price is something that can push somebody off a book, but a lower price never gets somebody on a book.
Yeah, I've talked about that for years.
Yeah, just doesn't happen. Total losses this time are a little under 800,000. Total gains was a little over 120,000, so net loss, go figure. On average, the comic loss was around 3,800 and the gain would be around 2,400. So it just comes down to so many more things dropped versus went up.
Mm-hmm.
But nature of the beast. And I don't see the more frequent sale or more frequent release schedule changing that. I don't see the proliferation of movies and television shows based on the comics having any real impact on that. It just comes down to, I really think all the publishers need to work on better return on the investment per issue. But I've been saying that for years.
Yeah, I could not agree more. There's really not a whole lot to say other than I am going to be interested to see the price breakdown in the next few months. As DC moves back to $299, as Marvel seems to be moving to $499 more and more often, it's going to be interesting to see how this chart looks.
Well, and I think they're competing in fundamentally different ways. Marvel is more willing to go for the cash grab and the cover gimmick. DC, at least from what they're saying, is focusing a lot more on content, reader retention, and reader satisfaction. Now, whether they deliver on that's another matter. But it may be that for a while, Marvel's bringing in a lot more money, but if DC can be shoring up their readership and their sales foundation there, then they can get to where they can maybe expand on that and grow their market. But I do think DC is in a very serious need to retrench, reconnect with the readers, reestablish themselves. Whereas, again, Marvel, they're doing all right. They can pretty much do whatever they want.
I do think DC's got a film coming out that I think could actually, again, much like Guardians of the Galaxy, may have a minor impact on sales. Suicide Squad, no one went to see a Batman movie or a Superman movie not knowing who Batman or Superman was. I have a feeling there were a lot of people that will be stepping into a theater that have no clue who the Suicide Squad are and who most of those characters are. So there's a chance that could help some of those characters and or a Suicide Squad book.
And let me tell you why we'll never know. You know who the artist on the new Suicide Squad book is going to be? Jim Lee.
Okay.
You put your Top Gun artist on the book, it's going to sell better, regardless of the movie. So those are the sorts of moves they make. Again, putting Bendis on Guardians of the Galaxy around the time the movie comes out. Did it sell better because of the movie or because of Bendis?
Yeah.
You know? And I'm not saying that the new Suicide Squad movie won't help the comic, but it's going to be so hard to tell because it's also a matter of, okay, they've just done Rebirth. There's so many other things that are going to muddy the water for a little bit here.
I agree. But again, I think a movie that introduces, a movie that really puts out a character to the general public that they were not aware of has a better chance of having an impact than oh yeah, it's Batman. We all know Batman's had a comic book. He's always had a comic book. We know who Batman is. We went to the movie. We don't read comics. We still don't read comics. You know, I mean, no one walked into a Batman movie and went, ooh, there's a thing called Batman?
Exactly. No, I agree with you entirely. Again,
Suicide Squad, that won't be the case.
It's basically your same argument for Guardians of the Galaxy.
Exactly. That's what I said.
And yeah, I agree with that entirely. It introduces the character out there. That can't do anything but help. Now, whether it's something we can trace back to that or not, it's another matter.
And again, due to the cover gimmicks and everything we talked about with Black Panther, arguably Black Panther can be helped by the movie that just came out too. But again, thanks to all the other stuff that happened with that number one, we don't really know that.
I do think that was certainly an aspect of how it did so well, but until it gets down to a sustainable level and we know what level it does seem to sustain at,
yeah,
thereabouts, including the standard drops and stuff. You know, if it's 30,000, then it didn't matter. If it's 60,000, okay, that's a different matter. So we'll see how that goes. Looking forward to it. Next time around, we'll also have the numbers for DC Universe Rebirth. I think that, again, is going to set some expectations on the DC stuff moving forward. We were a little late this time getting this episode out. It just took a little longer to coordinate and stuff. So we're really not, but I think as we record this, about 2 weeks through 2.5 weeks away from the next set of numbers getting released. So we may be back a little bit sooner next time. We may not. Depends on scheduling. We'll find out. but yeah, between with Rebirth coming out and stuff, tons of fun stuff on the numbers. If yes. People have questions, please post on the forum and stuff. I am happy to answer questions. Always fun to get different perspectives on this and to see what people are thinking and curious about. So anything else, or does that pretty much do it?
I'm good.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.
The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If you differ from your reality, please verify you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes 2 decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there is at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust it needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50, 25, or excuse, 10 items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which, as far as we know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer is here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the ultimate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Math, logic, and the English language itself seem to work very differently there.